Now we'll talk about mortgage arrears and the number of people who cannot pay their mortgages. Well, it's certainly not decreasing, but in recent weeks there have been news from AIB that they will write off parts of split mortgages. Success 2 reported from the new pilot scheme of mediation between AIB and the Irish Mortgage Holders Organisation. But then last night, RTE's business editor David Murphy reported that 13,000 or so mortgage holders with Irish Nationwide will not be given the opportunity to buy their own loans as part of the liquidation of IBRC. Independent TD Stephen Donnelly brought it up in the Dáil this afternoon during questions to the Taoiseach.
I can't imagine how frustrating it must be to be one of the owners of these 14,000 mortgages around Ireland and to hear the government say the following. Listen. We gave Irish Nationwide more than €5 billion, dead money. We gave it to make sure that every single one of the bondholders are covered. Your government, 18 months ago, stood over a €900 million bond payout for a bond that was bought in 2007, an unguaranteed bond. But now, when these people are saying, can we just buy our own loan? We are terrified that some firm from somewhere abroad is going to buy the loan. Can I just buy it? That the answer from the government, when you say, look, we are going to sell, we're going to let the special liquidator sell your mortgage for 90 cents in the euro or 50 cents in the euro, that's what we're going to do. But we're not going to let you buy it at that amount because it's too complicated and it's too expensive. Taoiseach, there's no trade-off. This is potentially a win-win. There is no trade-off between getting the best price for the mortgage and helping these families and, by consequence, the Irish domestic banking system and the economy as a whole. All they're saying is, hey, if you're going to sell my loan to those guys in New York for 90 cents in the euro or 50 cents in the euro, let me buy it for that price. I'll refinance it with AIB, or I'll refinance it by selling the property and getting myself out of negative equity. The state, the point is, Taoiseach, the state is taking the hit. The state is already taking the hit. We're selling at a discount. All these people want to do is buy it at a discount.
Ross McGuire, should those mortgage holders have the opportunity to bid for their own loans?
I think they should, of course. I think they may have difficulty because they're going to have to buy it using finance from somebody else, and that somebody else is unlikely to be there. I think another option is that the loans would be sold to an existing Irish institution which is properly regulated, such, for example, as AIB, that AIB would take over these 13,000 mortgages and then apply all the AIB criteria for those people. And so that kind of thing is available. The minister also has power under the IBRC Act, which is the act which winds up the IBRC, to direct the liquidators in the winding up to do certain things or to refrain from certain things. So he could direct them to sell that loan book to somebody who is regulated or who commits to being regulated and to behaving in a certain fashion.
Was there not a Supreme Court ruling which would have mandated essentially that people could have the opportunity to buy their own loans?
No, the Paddy McKillen Delway case said that when your loan is to be sold, you have an opportunity. You must be given an opportunity to make submissions, and therefore every one of those Irish Nationwide homeowners have received a letter from the special liquidator saying, do you want to make a submission? Now, of course, the special liquidators had no intention of ever listening to
that. It was just lip service to that decision.
But people obviously thought when they got that decision, actually, these people might listen to me, but they'd no intention. The minister made that clear. It was always going to be sold as a bulk. And OK, he says it's not possible to sell each individual loan, but he could sell them to AIB or to one of the Irish-owned banks, to Irish Life, or he could stipulate that it be sold to somebody who behaves in a certain way. He won't do that, he says, because that would minimise or lessen the price he gets. So in effect, it's a trade-off between the welfare of 13,000 Irish families and extra cash for IBRC loans. And I think that's the trade-off he's making. And he's made his bed and let him live in it. I mean, that's what he's saying.
Brendan Burgess, what's your view on this?
Well, there isn't actually really a trade-off between extra cash for the state and that. You know, a discount is being given to a third-party vulture fund, and all the borrowers are saying is, give us that discount instead. And as Stephen Donnelly said, this is actually win-win. You know, like, well, it's win-win-lose. Win for the borrower, win for the state, and lose for the Vulture Fund. What he's doing at the moment is it's going to be lose for the state, lose for the borrower and win for the Vulture Fund. I mean, it actually makes no sense whatsoever. So you have a fund out there, a Vulture Fund, they're going to be buying these mortgages. The mortgage book has been split into four groups, home loans, buy-to-lets, performing and non-performing. So the biggest interest is actually in the non-performing loans. They're going to be sold at a very significant discount, and the Vulture Funds are going to turn around and they're going to try and make as much money out of those as quickly as possible. And
by putting up interest rates as well?
Well, what they will do is they'll seek to repossess quite a few of them. So they'll say, look, your mortgage is unsustainable. You have a mortgage of 300,000. You know, we bought it for 50,000. The house is worth 100,000. Sell the house and we'll write off the shortfall. So, you know, the profit goes to the Vulture Fund. It should have stayed in the country between the taxpayer and the borrower. So, you know, the extraordinary mantra, as Stephen Donnelly called it today, of the state has always been, you know, but the banks must deal with the borrowers on a case-by-case basis. Yet the state-owned bank, IBRSD, not just owned, but actually controlled by the Minister for Finance, is refusing to deal with them on a case-by-case basis. It's just saying it's not convenient for us to do that. And that is costing the state money and it's costing the borrowers money. It makes just no sense whatsoever. And I think there's time yet. I mean, the minister imposed a 31st of December deadline for these mortgages to be sold. There really is no need for that deadline. I mean, the amount of money in the bigger scheme of things, it's about, I think it's about 1.8 billion or something like that, is the nominal value. And it's probably they're only going to sell them for about a billion or a little bit more. So there's still, they can allow time to sort these out.
I suspect
out.
The 31st of December deadline arises out of the fact this deal was done at the same time as they flipped those promissory notes to long-term bonds. And so the deal was, we'll do that, but we'll get rid of Anglo, we'll get rid of IBRC in the meantime, and that won't be stretched out to the definitive date, and that was set in stone as the 31st of December now, in fact, has leaked out beyond that. But they're saying the first quarter, end of first quarter this year, they intend to be rid of it all.
Nolene, presumably you would share much of the concerns that Brendan and Ross have said. But when he spoke about this last February, Michael Noonan talked about, you know, selling them as a book of loans. It didn't make sense to sell them individually. But he also talked about a contract of law that these mortgages had applied to them and that that would offer the protection to the mortgage holders.
Yeah, and the protection to the mortgage holder is so weak at the moment. Just listening to both Brendan and Ross, who are saying it right, and just thinking about 13,000 households. These are just the people, and you know, buy-to-lets aren't all of a one people either. They're not all greedy landlords who you just sort of can discount. There's a whole lot of people under huge stress right now. And to add to that, the fact that these mortgages are now in the hands of pure investors who have no political pressure that can be applied to them within the state. Now, having said that, I'm not 100% sure that because they're outside the code of conduct of mortgage arrears, they're necessarily that much worse off than those who are inside it. Because just right now at the moment, we're hearing from an awful lot of people who are supposed to be getting the benefit of this code of conduct of mortgage arrears, where we find that the lenders are still behaving in quite a chaotic way, where nobody seems to know what the meaning of the code of conduct of mortgage arrears is, where somebody that I was talking to thought somebody wasn't cooperating if they weren't paying their full mortgage in interest. And, you know, that's simply not the case, because that's not somebody who's in arrears at all if they're able to do all of that. So the problem to my mind is that, OK, so the 13,000 are being sacrificed, but all mortgage holders are being sacrificed really in the hands of keeping the banks steady and on a good road. So Minister Burton came out in January with some additional support for borrowers in arrears, where people will be able to get a little bit of help filling in their standard financial statement. That's an advance on what we had. That would be good. They'll be able to get a little bit of legal advice if their house is about to be repossessed. That's an advance on what we had. But really, when you think about it, that's tiny support for people who are trying to deal to keep the roofs over their heads. So to some extent, we're all in a situation where every single house owner who's in arrears is struggling, and particularly those who are in long-term arrears, those with 2 years arrears, they're struggling enormously at the moment. And just it's very hard to see where there's any sympathy or support or even recognition that it would be a really good thing to keep all of these people in their homes if a sustainable solution is found, because at the end of the day we don't need a massive number of people whose houses are repossessed, driving down the value of every other house and leaving a lot of people without suitable housing for themselves and their families. Sorry, that was a bit of a rant, but we've just, each time we think there might be some recognition of the difficulty mortgage holders are in, we come to something else like this, like the Irish Nationwide Mortgages.
Brent. Can I just say that I wouldn't devalue the Code of Conduct on mortgage arrears. At the moment, a borrower has, the minister has said that the borrower's contracts won't be changed. But of course, the contract allows the lender to put up the variable interest rate, and all of the Irish Nationwide Mortgages are variable. There's no tracker rates. So that's one thing that, you know, an ordinary bank is unlikely to push it up because of market pressures and political pressures. But the Code of Conduct on mortgage arrears, you know, has weaknesses, but it provides huge protections to people. And if somebody goes in, you know, if a lender tries to repossess a property and they have not gone through the mortgage arrears resolution process, you know, the judge is not going to allow that to happen.
Provided, Brendan, they have somebody who will point that out to said judge. Do you know the problem
well,
is
you have,
that it's
you have Ross's New Beginnings and you have other organisations doing that.
Groups, so, you have MABs, you have some people with private representation, but for an awful lot of people right now, they just don't have the support.
But
and
Noreen,
that's a huge
it's
problem.
It's very important that a message does not go out that, Asher, it doesn't matter whether they've got the protection of the Code of Conduct and mortgage arrears. It's very important that the legislation is changed so that anybody who buys mortgages in Ireland must be regulated by the central bank and, you know, the ombudsman. They must have access to the ombudsman as well. That is really important. And whatever you think about the Code of Conduct of Mortgage Arrears, it provides
some
level of
protection.
Support.
It does.
It's worth keeping.
Yeah. Let me bring Joanna Tuffy in. Joanna, just on this specific issue of the Irish Nationwide Mortgages. I could just say to you, you know, despite all the pain that people have endured and the sacrifices that they've made over the last number of years, it still seems that it's the little guy who's being sacrificed yet again.
Yeah, I suppose I wanted to respond to a couple of points there. In relation to Nolan's point about, you know, are they any worse off if they're outside of the MARP? Like, the thing about MARP, as Brendan has pointed out, is there's a chain. It mightn't be working perfectly, but there is a chain of accountability. So if you're not successful, you can then appeal it, you know, to an independent body, and ultimately you can appeal it to the...
If we're talking about the Irish Nationwide Mortgage Holders.
Yeah, no,
shouldn't they be allowed to buy their own loans?
The point that has been raised by Ross is what I would be thinking about as well. How feasible is it that people who are in mortgage distress, that they could raise the money to buy their mortgage? And I mean, like, you know, for example, people are in difficulties. Some people are even still trying to pay their mortgages and they might be on social welfare themselves. You know what I mean? How would they possibly get financed to buy the mortgage?
There are different categories.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, 50% of the mortgages are actually performing. Many of those would be able to go to another bank and, you know, get a loan to buy out their mortgages. They won't be getting a 40% discount, but they would be getting something like a 10% discount. Those mortgages which are performing will be sold at around a 10% discount.
So they
would be able to. But there's also a group of people who have completely unsustainable mortgages. And it doesn't matter what you do, split mortgage, whatever else, they will never be able to repay their mortgages. There's probably up to 13,000. It could be as high as 2,000 or 3,000 within IBRC alone. They should be given the opportunity to put their house on the market, sell the house, pay the proceeds off the mortgage and have the shortfall written off, that they get a fresh start. They don't need a personal insolvency arrangement. They don't need bankruptcy or anything else like that. But none of this has been offered to them. The minister has just said the contract stands, and they had the cheek to say, well, anybody who wishes can pay off their mortgage at par. I mean, you know, that's a ridiculous thing for the minister to be saying.
What I would be interested to know, I suppose, maybe from Ross or Nolene, like, I mean, if people's mortgages are bought up in this way, like, will they still be able to access, you know, the personal insolvency and the bankruptcy? Because I suppose that would be very important, yes, because lots of those people mightn't even be able to get through.
It's all, they're not allowed to buy their own mortgages. So,
well, I mean, but the thing is, like, who can buy their own mortgage? I just don't see how that's an individual being expected to buy their mortgage.
I suppose the thing is that, again, it's just lumping them all together is the problem, because some of them would
be... Are they not the wealthy people or people who could get loans anyway? It just doesn't make sense.
I do think the idea of buying their own mortgage, that it's really probably fanciful, because there are no banks lending really at the moment. But I do think that what is happening to these people is that they're being exposed to danger, because, as Brendan said, the people who will buy these loans, especially if they're distressed, are bottom feeders. They are hedge funds who are out to make as much money as quickly as they can. Now, put them up against ordinary families, and, you know, the competition is pretty obvious what's going to happen. Now, of course, people do have the protection of the courts, but they are, the protection of MARP and other central bank type protections are removed from them. And the minister should be able to answer, why is he exposing ordinary Irish families here when he doesn't have to do that?
I think there's some houses as well at this stage who, and I think it was you said it earlier, Brendan, if, for instance, the mortgage is being sold for 50% of its value or 40% of its value, if the house was sold, you could clear the mortgage at roughly that rate, and you'd be free of debt. You wouldn't need the personal insolvency or the bankruptcy arrangement.
But again, how easy is it to sell houses at the moment? You know,
And of course, one size does not fit all in this particular case. I suppose the problem is that it goes further and further away from a solution when it goes out to these investors.
No, I agree with that. Yeah. I don't agree with these mortgages being sold to vulture capital or vulture speculators or whatever they're called. But at the same time, I think that there's no point people making proposals that just aren't realistic.
Okay, there are 13,000 mortgage holders. Okay, there's a range of solutions. Some of them will be able to switch. There is actually an active switching market at the moment. KBC Bank is actively out there saying, we want you to switch, and they'll pay money for people to switch. Mm. Now, they're not going to switch somebody in heavy negative equity or somebody who's in arrears history. But some of those 13,000 are perfectly good mortgages in positive equity, and they could switch. But the other thing, there's no reason at all why the minister didn't turn around to AIB and PTSB, two banks which he owns, and says, lads, make you know, money available to people to buy their mortgages from IBRC. You know, relax your criteria a little. I mean, don't go mad giving money to people with an arrears history, but people who might be in a bit of negative equity, but who have been paying and who have to meet the affordability criteria, lend money to them. That 13,000 mortgages, those 13,000 mortgages could have been, you know, cut down to probably a rump of 3,000 or 4,000, and you know, which would have to be sold maybe to a vulture fund, but then make sure that the vulture fund is subject to the CCMA. But
they're the priority, surely, is but the, even, the people even, are the weakest even, yeah, the
even,
chain.
Even all of the lenders in Ireland, all of the current borrowers in Ireland aren't subject to the code of conduct on mortgage arrears. You know, they're not all getting the benefit of it. It's really only the ones that the central bank controls that are getting the benefit of it.
One of the organisations that's come into the country is a group called Pepper. They're an Australian private equity group, and they bought out the GE book. Now, in fact, as it turns out, they are quite advanced and progressive in the way they think, much more advanced and progressive than the incumbent lot. And they're quite commercial in their view. And they look at you and they say, listen, we want to work together with you. So they come up with ideas and plans and ways of doing things that the Irish banks are now beginning or might begin to follow with. So, in fact, if you get a group like that, then you've got, you know, potentially good news. What I'm concerned is that the minister is just putting out to the guys who pay the biggest price instead of looking beyond money and saying, I want you to have some track record and I want us to be able to see the kind of business models you'd apply. Because if you're just going to go and screw these people, we don't want you here. So that's something that he should do, as opposed to give it to Kieran Wallace and KPMG and say, get the best price for us. That just doesn't make sense.
Nolene, on the bigger picture in terms of mortgage arrears and the difficulties that people are having, what is the situation at the moment? Are deals being done between them and their banks? Has the situation gotten any better in terms of their debt resolution?
Well, according to the Department of Finance, deals are being done and sustainable solutions are being put in place. I think the trouble we have is a terrible lack of data on what sustainable solutions look like. We don't know how the central bank has looked at the files of the lenders. All we know is when we get together, Brendan and Ross and myself, and we exchange stories about what we hear. So everybody knows some solutions are being put in place. How sustainable are they for people? It's very hard to know. That probably won't be true for the long term. What we also know is that those in long term arrears, those with arrears of over 2 years, are very often in very deep trouble with arrears. Arrears alone averaging at €40,000. Now, if you just think of any of us who have our own mortgage and just think about making the monthly payments and then trying to deal with that level of arrears as well, those look like very deep arrears and very tricky solutions to deal with. So I think in some ways we're still in this situation where maybe the easier loans are being dealt with and the more intractable ones remain to be dealt with, and that remains a serious problem, would be my sense of it and our sense in FLAC, where but also the level at which we are every single day dealing with people who are in huge distress because of the way it is being dealt with. You know, the process in some ways is unkind and unfair and cruel and adding stress in an already difficult situation where people are dealing with the roofs over their heads.
What's your experience, Ross, on the bigger picture about deals?
I would say that certainly deals are being done, but I think Nolene hit the nail on the head here, is are they sustainable? I am concerned that the kind of deals that are being done outside of the insolvency system, where there's formal debt write-down, but the kind of informal deals done with the banks are done in such a way as they will create trouble up ahead. In other words, people will ultimately fall back into arrears. And the reason for that is as follows. The banks say, looking at you, if they're going to do a deal, we really, say for example, AIB, will say, we want to let you live on what's called ISI guidelines, which is the very basic minimum standard set out by the Insolvency Service, plus 20%. So for an individual, that would be somewhere around €1,200 a month. And that's it, they say, that's what you're fixed at and we take the rest effectively and we'll restructure your mortgage so that you can go ahead. And that's all good. The problem is, as person's circumstances changes, maybe they have a child or something else happens, there's very little room for manoeuvre. And that's where I am concerned, and New Beginning, you know, frontline staff would say they are concerned that while that deal is manageable right now, if a car breaks down, if another child arrives or somebody gets sick or something happens, which is normal in life, that the strictures are so tight that there will be default again. So the real question is the deal sustainable? And my concern in some cases, and in cases which are being, I mean, they're thrown away, throwing out split mortgage a bit like confetti at the moment, is that my concern is that the strictures are so tight that they're not sustainable, and going forward, people will fall back into it.
Do you agree, Brent?
Not really, no. I mean, AIB, to give them their due, yeah, and that is the example that Ross came up with. AIB has brought out a new product. Although they haven't launched it officially, we sort of know the details of it. It's a variation of the split mortgage. They don't charge any interest on the warehouse. They put it into the warehouse. So let's say you have a mortgage of 300,000. They reckon you can repay a mortgage based on 200,000. They'd put 100,000 into the warehouse. They won't charge interest. And uniquely for the banks, they won't review that warehouse. So if you go along and your income improves, I mean, Ross spoke about changing circumstances. Circumstances improve as well as disimprove. So if you go out and your income improves, or if you get a lump sum or something like that, you don't have to pay off the warehouse. So, you know, that warehouse stays there, and that warehouse becomes, you know, is still charged against your home. So when you sell your home, the warehouse will be paid off. But if you're in your final home and you're going to be there until you die, that warehouse is actually theoretically irrelevant and practically irrelevant. But the other thing about what they've done, which is very unusual, if you stick to the split mortgage for 5 years, they will write off 5% of the warehouse.
Yeah.
And if you stick for a further 5 years, they'll wipe out another 5%. And time cures a lot of things. And so that warehouse will be wiped out by inflation alone over a period of 10 or 15 years. So to give AIB their
No, to
credit,
give it its due, they know, have actually... This is the best.
This is the best, right.
But I would say
Pepper have been doing it for a while. Yeah.
But I think that with AIB, absolutely, they're moving in the right direction and they've discussed and they are going to do some debt write-down, which for a pillar bank is a major step forward. I just say that when you look at the loan that you're left with, the A loan, that's based on you living on ISI guidelines plus a bit. And yeah. my concern well, is that, you know, life can become, depending on your stage in life, your circumstances and all the rest, life can become more expensive. So, for example, if another child comes along or somebody, children grow up. And also what AIB have said, and they've said it to us, is the great thing about this is that they don't review you. In other words, that's it. We lock you in. And if you make more money, that's great. And that is great and fair play to AIB. But for a lot of people, the fact is, if they're in stable employment, their income is not going up in any...
But Ross, you're missing a very vital point here.
And if you're on ISI plus 20%, that is...
A point that is missed in all of this argument is that AIB will reduce your active mortgage to as low as 80% of the market value of your home. The mortgage repayments on that will be hugely less than the rent you would pay or the cost of buying a house from scratch. So there is a problem that some people are going to be still struggling, but they're going to be struggling to live in any situation because, you know, increased tax, unemployment and stuff like that has hit people. So AIB are really stretching as far as I think that they can go. In fact, I wrote a piece to say that I think the AIB split mortgage might be actually too generous. And I've gone back on that because I had misunderstood some of the unofficial states of it. But I actually think it's an extremely fair mortgage. And if somebody can't pay the mortgage on the current value of their property, well, then, you know, maybe their mortgage is unsustainable and maybe they should go bankrupt.
Can I just say something, though? But we have, over the last couple of years, seemed to come to a conclusion that the only solution to mortgage impairment is a split mortgage of some kind or another. The Department of Finance is producing figures saying that some interest-only solutions are seen as sustainable solutions. There is no indication at all that anybody recognises that debt will have to be permanently written off, not just placed on a shelf or in a warehouse or wherever you technically like to call it.
Except the insolvency service.
Well, hold on a second. No. I mean, the insolvency service, Ross, requires you to go to become insolvent or to go bankrupt. You see, it's the range of solutions that we're not seeing a huge number of. And split mortgages will suit some and they are improving. But they're not a solution for everybody who's there. Some people need debt write-down but to maintain their house.
But at the same time, Nolan, isn't the split mortgage a form of debt write-down? Because by extending out the loan, you're making, effectively, you are writing off some of the money that you would pay off in the long term.
Maybe you are in Dublin. But maybe you're not in other parts of the country where the price of property continues to reduce month on month on month and may never come back up again to that bit, and where somebody is left with a huge chunk to pay right at the end. All I'm saying is we just tend to talk about split mortgages as if they were the only solution to mortgage debt. There is a much wider range out there, and there is, I think, like, it has been touted as the new thing to do when we really should be looking at a wider range.
I would absolutely agree with that. I think that there is, each person is different, their circumstances would be different, their income is different, their time in life is different, whether they want to hold on to the house or let go, etc., etc., etc. And so you need to look at a range of solutions, one of which is split mortgages. For example, if you do a split mortgage and you've got other debt, you're not allowed to pay any of the other debts. So you could be continued to be tortured by other creditors. So there's a range of solutions. So, for example, if somebody comes into New Beginning, we triage them, we look at them and we say, you're a bankruptcy candidate or you're an insolvency candidate. Or, no, you're actually a split mortgage candidate. So you need to look at a wide range of factors. And we're moving to that, I think, at the moment. And part of that is undoubtedly debt write-down, and that will become a bigger part, in my view, of the solution as we go forward to sustainability.
Well, just in relation to like the experience I have as a TD, like my impression is that it's extremely hard for people to get split mortgages and to get the various types of agreements with their banks. Mm-hmm. And there's an awful lot of obstacles and hurdles for people to get through before they can get to that stage. And I would just make a point as well that there are, you know, because I asked a parliamentary question about it and I was given the number of split mortgages and things like that and how they're reaching, expect to reach their targets. But it's all about people in arrears. There's an awful lot of people who are not in arrears but are paying, but it's not sustainable for them to be paying. They're scraping the money together and they're not living their lives.
Or,
you know?
Or their parents are giving them the money
or the
all
parents
the time.
Are giving them money and that's been used against
renting.
Them.
There's a lot of people renting and they're not in sustainable situations. Yeah. Like there's a level of poverty in the country as a result of the economic
whole
situation. And there's huge numbers of people in rent arrears. There's huge numbers of people. So, you know, we sort of said, oh, the banks aren't doing enough to sort out the borrowers.
But they most definitely aren't doing enough. Brandon, like, I mean, the thing about it is my impression is the banks are just not being proactive enough. And like their whole process, while I would argue in favour of the process in the sense of that there's accountability, it's a very cold process. It's all very much done on paper. You have to send in standard financial statements. There's a big, long delay before you hear a decision. You know, when you get a decision, you know, your issue is, do you appeal it? You know, and all
same,
that kind of stuff.
To the same institution.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Although there is an appeals to an I suppose a mortgage appeals officer, which is kind of removed from the original institution. But the thing is, like, there's such hurdles and the length of time, and then you're seeing the impact on the people of like struggling to pay off money that they can't afford, you know. And what I feel about it is the banks need to be much more proactive because they're kind of staving off the inevitable. And you know that what they need to do, I think, is they need to do much more, you know, sitting down with people and trying to solve the problem.
Okay,
you know.
Just, I agree. Knowledge is power, however, and people need to know their options. And one of the things that New Beginning is doing is we're doing a series of seminars in every county in Ireland between now and Easter. We're in Cork tomorrow night, Tralee on Thursday night, and details
there's
on New Beginning.
Plug.
But it's a free seminar, but people will hear about the options and would recommend that people at least get to know their options.
Are you on the road, Fleck?
Well, just call our low call number 1890
350 250. And ask about money.com. Brendan Burgess, Joanna Tuffy, Ross Maguire and Nolene Blackwell. Thank you all very much indeed.